two-day sweaty regime. The Biden administration announced on Monday night that President Biden would veto the bill if it reaches his desk, in the light of White House's insistence on the border national security deal.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details. And now we enlighten you with Ayah 260 to 263 of Surah Baqarah, recited by Shahriyar Parhizgar.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Wa idh qala Ibrahim Rabbi arini kayfa tuhyi al-mauta qala awalam tu'min qala bala walakin liyatma'inna qalbi قال فخذ أربعة من الطير فصرهن إليك ثم اجعل على كل جبل منهن جزءا ثم ادعهن يأتينك سعيا واعلم أن الله عزيز حكيم مثل الذين ينفقون أموالهم في سبيل الله كمثل حبة أنبتت سبع سنابل في كل سنبلة مئة حبة والله يضاعف لمن يشاء وَاللَّهُ وَاسِعٌ عَلِيمٌ الَّذِينَ يُنْفِقُونَ أَمْوَالَهُمْ فِي سَبِيلِ اللَّهِ ثُمَّ لَا يُتْبِعُونَ مَا أَنْفَقُوا مَنًّا وَلَا أَذًى لَهُمْ أَجْرُهُمْ عِنْدَ رَبِّهِمْ لهم أجرهم عند ربهم ولا خوف عليهم ولا هم يحزنون قول معروف ومغفرة خير من صدقة يتبعها هذا والله غني حليم.
In the name of Allah, the All-Compassionate, the All-Merciful. And when Abraham said, My Lord, show me how you revive the dead. He said, Do you not believe? He said, Yes indeed, but in order that my heart may be at rest. He said, Take four of the birds, then cut them into pieces, and place a part of them on every mountain. Then call them, they will come to you, hastening. And know that Allah is Almighty and All-Wise. Those who spend their wealth in the way of Allah and then do not follow what they have spent with reproaches and affronts, they shall have their reward near their Lord, and they will have no fear, nor will they grieve. An honorable word with pardon is better than a charity followed by affront, and Allah is all-sufficient, most forbearing.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
As a U.S.-Israeli genocide in Gaza enters its 141st day, killing and destruction campaign against Palestinians continues, with the death toll nearing 30,000. Palestinian resistance fighters persist battling Israeli occupation forces in Gaza, inflicting heavy losses on invading troops. And Yemenis hold yet another massive rally in solidarity with the Palestinians, as our army continues its campaign against Israel-linked vessels in the Red Sea. In our top story, Israeli occupation forces conduct fresh strikes on the Gaza Strip, killing dozens of Palestinians and leaving hundreds injured. At least 24 people, most of them women and children, were killed in an Israeli airstrike on the city of Deir al-Balah in central Gaza. Israeli warships also opened fire off the coast of Rafah, the southern border city where some 1.5 million Palestinians are seeking shelter. Elsewhere in the south, regime warplanes carried out an airstrike targeting the western areas of Khan Yunis. In the same city, Israeli troops once again stormed Al-Nasser Hospital, preventing entry or exit of medical staff and civilians. More than 29,500 Palestinians, most of them women and children, have been killed since Israel started its onslaught on Gaza on October the 7th, and about 70,000 others have been injured. And for more, we're going to swing over to Deir al-Balah and the besieged Gaza Strip, where we're joined by Moti Abu Musabe. Hello, Moti. Hope you're safe and doing well. The latest, if you could, on the ground there, please, Moti.
Yes, the Israeli genocide enters its 141st day with more airstrikes and attacks and massacres against the Palestinian civilians across all areas of Gaza Strip. And here in the central area of Gaza Strip, and particularly in Deir al-Balah city, the echoes of the last Israeli massacres committed in Deir al-Balah city against the Palestinian civilians are still resonating, with more dead bodies brought to the Al-Aqsa Martyrs Hospital. The number of those Palestinian civilians who were killed over that attack actually amounted to 28 Palestinian civilians, mostly women and children. They were brought to the Al-Aqsa Martyrs Hospital with their bodies cut into pieces and torn apart by the Israeli missiles. The people here are gathering these moments. They are going and they are praising to mourn the dead bodies and to bid farewell to those people who were killed over the last attack. So this is the current situation here in the central area of Gaza Strip. Another sad morning for the people here. However, when it comes to Khan Yunis city, the Israeli occupation forces continue their attacks against several areas of the city, where the western parts of the city, particularly the surrounding areas of the Nasser Medical Complex and Al-Amal Hospital, actually they were subjected to continuous and relentless Israeli airstrikes. That Israeli forces are still besieging those hospitals and withholding the people stranded inside the hospitals from reaching any medical supplies or humanitarian needs and necessities. We are talking about the humanitarian catastrophic are still hitting those areas, while the eastern parts of the city, particularly Abasan, the current situation is still catastrophic and disastrous, as the Israeli airstrikes were maintained over the last night. Fierce fire belts actually hit that area, and dozens of the Palestinian central buildings and houses were destroyed over those attacks, while the Israeli artillery also targeted those areas relentlessly. Even in Rafah city, the Israeli occupation forces waged several and multiple Israeli airstrikes against the residential buildings there, knowing that the entire city is completely overwhelmed and overcrowded with the people there. In Gaza city, Az-Zaytun neighborhood is still under the suffocating Israeli siege and attack, as the Israeli occupation forces are still circumventing the neighborhood, preventing the people from even leaving that neighborhood amid the continuous and the heavy bombardments of the Israeli airstrikes, the Israeli artillery, and the gunfire of the Israeli tanks towards the Palestinian people. Even the Palestinian and the evacuation centers taking shelter by the Palestinian civilians, they were under heavy attacks of the Israeli occupation forces. These attacks are taking place against the Palestinian civilians amid the catastrophic humanitarian conditions that are still befalling the people here in Gaza Strip. 2.3 Palestinian civilians are starving, and they are suffering from the unprecedented famine that are attacking him and hitting them amid this unprecedented brutal Israeli aggression to you.
Right, and Moti, you're mentioning all these women and children killed in this attack in Deir al-Bala. Do we know exactly what was targeted?
Yes, actually, it was a residential apartment located in Al-Bishara neighborhood in the central area of Gaza, of Deir al-Bala city, sorry. And those people who were there, actually, they were displaced Palestinians who fled their neighborhoods and residential squares and neighborhoods in Gaza city and in the northern part of Gaza Strip, and they evacuated to these areas, particularly in Deir al-Bala city, at the very beginning of this onslaught on Gaza Strip, and now the Israeli occupation forces targeted them. We witnessed that the vast majority of those dead bodies were from the children, were from the women who were targeted mercilessly by the Israeli occupation forces. And it's not the first case, it's not the first crime for the Israeli occupation forces to target the Palestinian civilians. 70% of the people who have been killed since the beginning of this onslaught on Gaza Strip were from children and women. So these are the targets of the Israeli occupation forces, and apparently the Israeli occupation forces are going to commit more and more crimes as the Israeli fighter drones are still hovering over low heights and the distances in our skies here.
Thank you, Moti. Stay safe. We'll talk to you soon. Moti Abu Musab, they're joining us from Deir al-Bala on the besieged Gaza Strip. Israeli forces about launching new airstrikes against the southern Gaza Strip city of Rafah. City houses nearly 1.5 million displaced people from throughout the besieged enclave that had been declared a safe zone by the Israeli regime. So let's listen to some Palestinian accounts about the latest Israeli airstrikes there.
Every day, there are 50 martyrs in the safe areas, or 100 martyrs. Every day, 20 to 30 houses or 30 buildings are destroyed. This is an international conspiracy against us. This is what they want. Every day there are 30, 50, or 100 killed, numbers like that. Why then would they want a ceasefire? We are dying little by little. We have more than 100,000 martyrs and wounded. Even if the Israelis leave us, more than 200,000 or 300,000 people will die from the exposure to gases and toxic fumes from the bombardments. This is how we will die. Those American weapons that are donated to Israel, we have never seen anything like this. Israeli rockets are targeting children, homes, and places housing innocent, simple civilians.
There's no safe place in Gaza. They said Rafah was a safe place. Look and show people how safe it is. They dropped barrels of bombs on innocent people in their sleep. They were innocent children. They were left under the rubble last night.
We were sleeping in our house when we heard the sound of a missile. The noise was very loud, and as you can see, it caused a significant amount of damage. We rushed to the site and found people martyred and injured. This is humiliating. As you can see, this two-story house was completely erased. This was an annihilation missile, not a normal missile. Rafah is supposed to be safe, but as you can see, nowhere is left safe. The places they said were safe are targeted with missiles. There's no safety.
A senior Hamas official says Israel cannot continue its genocidal campaign in Gaza without support from its main ally, the U.S.
America playing a role, being a complete accomplice in the genocidal war being waged by the Zionist entity or by the occupation entity against the unarmed civilians in the Gaza Strip, and the also full-fledged support for all of the massacres and the crimes which constitute a violation of international laws because of the administration obstructing any attempts to put an end to the aggression. And this means an American green light, a clear green light for the Zionist enemy to continue with its crimes. And here, we stress that the hunger war being waged and the ongoing massacres and the systematic destruction of all forms of life in the Gaza Strip would not have continued were it not for the support of this criminal administration whose hands are soaked in the blood of our people, the men or the women, children and elderly. And full responsibility falls on the shoulders of the occupation. This would not have happened were it not for the direct role of the American administration as a result of the war machine, which is completely funded by it, and also being a direct accomplice on the ground.
Speaking at a presser in Beirut, Hamdan also called for an independent probe into recent UN report revealing multiple forms of abuse by Israeli forces against Palestinian women and children in Gaza and the occupied West Bank. A senior Hamas official added, Israel will never achieve its goal of releasing captives in Gaza through force. He also denounced the regime's, quote, war of famine against Palestinians in Gaza and called on international organizations, including the World Food Program and the UN Agency for Palestinian Refugees, not to give in to Israeli pressure. Hamdan also warned any Israeli assault on Al-Aqsa Mosque or Palestinian worshippers in occupied Al-Quds will not go unpunished. Meanwhile, Palestinian resistance movements continue to push back against Israeli forces in Gaza as fighting on the ground continues. The military wing of Hamas says it targeted a group of Israeli forces with anti-personnel missiles inside a building in Gaza City. The Al-Qassam Brigade said they also struck an Israeli Merkava tank. Meanwhile, intense fighting continues in Khan Yunis in southern Gaza, where Islamic Jihad says it launched a deadly attack on a gathering of Israeli troops. Israel's confirmed deaths of more than 230 of its troops since the regime began its Gaza onslaught in late October. Palestinians, however, say Israel is hiding the actual number in an attempt to damage control. Meanwhile, the Hezbollah resistance movement says it's targeted several Israeli military sites across the Lebanese border. Group says it hit Israeli sites and occupied Sheba Farms with missiles. According to Hezbollah, attacks left injuries among Israeli troops. The movement says it also launched drones against Israeli locations near the Lebanese border. The resistance movement and the Israeli military have been exchanging fire since the regime began its onslaught on the Gaza Strip. Hezbollah has vowed to support the Palestinians battling Israel's Gaza onslaught by engaging regime forces on another front. Under the title, Our Path with Gaza Moves Forward Until Victory, thousands of Yemenis take to the streets of Sana'a and other cities to reaffirm their full support for Palestinians in Gaza. Abdul Latif Al-Washali reports from Sana'a.
In yet another rally to support the Palestinians in Gaza Strip, thousands of Yemenis have filled the streets of the capital Sana'a and other major cities. They chanted slogans supporting Palestinian resistance and condemned the Arab world's indifference toward Israeli atrocities in Gaza.
The Yemeni people were raised since their childhood to love and adore Palestine and to love jihad in Palestine. Therefore, when the opportunity arose to have an influential position under the leadership of Ansarullah, they did not hesitate and went out to the streets, believing that their protests were jihad for the sake of God, as the least duty as long as the borders were not open for them, and they were not able to fight with the Palestinians.
A message to the European peoples. Your governments today are contributing to genocide against the Palestinian people in Gaza by submitting to America's orders to militarize the Red Sea. America involves you in its own problems. The solution to stopping the Red Sea operations is to stop the aggression against Gaza and lift the siege. This is the easiest solution. But if your government wants to submit to America's orders, you will see what we will teach. You will see that we will teach America a lesson that will never forget. And if you attack us, you will unfortunately meet the same fate.
Protesters praised the recent operations by the Yemeni army, including the sinking of a British vessel in the Gulf of Aden. They also celebrated the introduction of the submarine weapon into the Yemeni army's arsenal, believing it will enhance the success of Yemen's naval operations.
The submarines introduced by Abdul Malik al-Houthi are one of the surprises that the enemy is going to face if it continues its aggression against Gaza. The Yemeni armed forces, specifically the Yemeni Navy, still have surprises coming, a wide range of targets, and also a superior ability to obtain information at any time and place. Therefore, these are successive military messages, the content of which is that we will escalate further as long as Israel's war in Gaza continues, and Yemen has the upper hand in its waters, and this position will never change.
Earlier, the spokesman of the Yemeni army announced that they have successfully carried out three military operations. The first operation involved launching multiple ballistic missiles and drones against various targets in Eilat-occupied Palestine. The other two attacks targeted an American destroyer and the British vessel Islander in the Red Sea and Gulf of Aden. He added that the British ship was set on fire as a result of the attack.
Every Friday, people gather here affirming that they will never tire of taking to the streets to show support for the oppressed people of Palestine as long as the Israeli genocide war on Gaza continues. They believe it is the least that all Muslims around the world should do as a religious duty toward the innocent civilians of Palestine. Abdul Latif Al-Washali, Sana'a.
Thank you for tuning in, and bye-bye for now.
When the whole world is silent towards oppression, even one voice becomes powerful. IRIB English Radio, the voice of the voiceless. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en.
supplication on Saturdays. In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful. Bismillah, words that seekers of sanctuary repeatedly recite. Words that the very cautious in search of protection often repeat. I seek refuge with Allah, the Exalted above all, from the oppression of the unjust, from the deceitful malice the envious use to lay snares and traps, from the injustice and outrage of the tyrants, and I sing his praise. Do better and go beyond other praisers. O Allah, thou art one, has no partner, and is the Lord and Master without being made. There is no discrepancy or nonsense in thy commands, nor there is lawlessness in thy kingdom. I beseech thee to send blessings on Muhammad, thy servant, thy messenger. To let me ask thee for enlightenment and inspiration, so as to be thankful for thy bounties, which alone get thy approval ultimately. To help me to obey thee and instinctively worship thee, and make me deserve thy rewards on account of thy very patronage. And have mercy on me, and prevent me from breaking in the bounds of thy prohibitions, as far as I am kept alive, and show the way unto that which is useful and advantageous till I go on survive. To let me take to heart the meanings of thy book, and by its reading throw down the heavy burden of sins, and receive welfare and salvation as a gift. Let not my family and friends who love me leave me alone. Let thy favors reach me in abundance during the remainder of my life, exactly as they used to be made available for me in full in the days gone by. O, the Most Merciful.
The Limelight.
It was the third time that Washington exercised its veto at the Security Council in the past 4 months in order to prolong the Zionist regime's military campaign in Gaza, which the International Court of Justice determined in an interim ruling may plausibly constitute a genocide. Regarding this issue, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. The Electronic Intifada wrote, the United States vetoed a draft United Nations Security Council resolution demanding an immediate humanitarian ceasefire in Gaza recently. 13 states voted in favor of the Algerian initiative, while the UK abstained. It was the third time that Washington exercised its veto at the Security Council in the past 4 months in order to prolong the Zionist regime's military campaign in Gaza, which the International Court of Justice determined in an interim ruling may plausibly constitute a genocide. That UN tribunal, also known as the World Court, is currently holding oral hearings on the legal consequences of the Zionist regime's prolonged military occupation of the West Bank and the Gaza Strip. The UN General Assembly has voted by a large majority in favor of a ceasefire in Gaza on two occasions. Those adopted resolutions are not legally binding, but testify to the overwhelming global support for a ceasefire and the isolation of the US regime, which is widely viewed as a full partner to the death and destruction in Gaza. While it vetoed the draft resolution, the United States is pushing its own initiative at the Security Council that would link a temporary ceasefire to the release of foreign nationals and Israelis held in Gaza since October 7th. Linda Thomas Greenfield, the U.S. ambassador to the UN, argued that a resolution calling for an immediate ceasefire would put sensitive negotiations in jeopardy, referring to between the Zionist regime, the U.S., Qatar, and Egypt, aimed at securing the release of remaining Israelis and foreign nationals held in Gaza since October 7th. According to Reuters, Washington plans to allow time for negotiations and will not rush to a vote on its draft resolution. In the meantime, the U.S. veto pushes the situation in Gaza into a more dangerous one, China's ambassador said recently, accusing Washington of stifling an overwhelming consensus at the Security Council. The longer the war is prolonged in Gaza, the UN Secretary General has warned, the greater a risk that the wider region will become engulfed in war. Algeria's ambassador to the UN said following the recent vote, "The wrong decisions today will have a cost on our region and our world tomorrow." He added, "And this cost will be violence and instability. It will also cost additional lives," with the Palestinian Health Ministry in Gaza reporting at least 29,195 fatalities since October 7th, more than 100 in the past 24 hours alone, and more than 67,000 injuries. Thousands more are missing and feared dead under the rubble. Destroyed buildings. Palestinians in Gaza are also succumbing to disease and hunger resulting from the Zionist regime's total siege on the territory and the destruction of health and sanitation infrastructure. One in six children under the age of two in Gaza's north are acutely malnourished, according to a recent study, and the situation is likely to be even graver today. Three UN agencies said recently, a report by independent researchers in the US and the UK projects, that even if the war ended now, there would be some 8,000 excess deaths in Gaza over the next 6 months due to traumatic injuries, malnutrition, infectious disease, and lack of access to medical care. The counter-resolution circulated by the U.S. condemns the October 7th events. The U.S. draft resolution also states that a major ground offensive into Rafah would harm and displace civilians, including potentially into neighboring countries, which would have serious implications for regional peace and security. The text underscores that such a major ground offensive should not proceed under current circumstances. U.S. President Joe Biden phoned Benjamin Netanyahu, the Zionist regime prime minister, twice in recent days to warn him against launching a military operation in Rafah without a credible plan to ensure the safety of civilians, Reuters claimed. The Biden administration has said that despite its professed opposition to an incursion into Rafah, where more than 1 million displaced Palestinians are now concentrated, it says it would not impose any material consequences on the Zionist regime if it moves forward. The Zionist regime is planning to continue its high-intensity war in Gaza for another 6 to 8 weeks, officials told Reuters, after which it would shift to a lower intensity phase of targeted airstrikes and special forces operations, indicating that the Zionist regime's planning isn't as cohesive as was suggested by Reuters. Benny Gantz, the opposition leader and member of the Zionist regime's war cabinet, said recently that fighting will begin in Rafah in a few weeks if the hostages are not home. He added that Hamas has a choice. They can surrender, release the hostages, and civilians of Gaza can celebrate the Feast of Ramadan. Netanyahu, keen to prolong the military offensive, said recently that we are not willing to pay any price to secure the release of some 130 remaining captives in Gaza, most of whom are believed to still be alive. The Zionist regime's prime minister's statement echoed comments made by Bezalel Smotrich, the far-right finance minister, prioritizing destroying the resistance movement Hamas over bringing back the captives. Earlier this month, Netanyahu rejected a proposal offered by the resistance movement Hamas for a prisoner exchange and month-long truce, calling it delusional and vowing total victory in Gaza. Netanyahu quitting the talks provoked renewed protests by the family members of people still held captive in Gaza, who have blocked highways and lit fires as they demand the return of their people while they are still alive. During a week-long truce in late November, more than 100 captives were freed in exchange for dozens of Palestinian women and children held by the child killer regime of Israel. Recently, two Israeli-Argentine men who the Zionist regime's military claimed to have rescued in a raid in Gaza days earlier urged Netanyahu to reach another agreement with Hamas, saying not everyone could be brought back in heroic operations. They said in a joint statement, along with other family members who were released in November, only through a deal can they be returned. Recently, Abu Obeidah, spokesperson for the armed wing of resistance movement Hamas, said that there have been many losses of its captives and those who remain alive are in extremely difficult conditions. Qatar said recently that Hamas confirmed that it had received and begun delivering medicines for the captives under a deal brokered by the Persian Gulf monarchy and France. Qatar's foreign minister said that the agreement includes the entry of medicines and shipment of humanitarian aid to civilians in Gaza, especially in the most affected and damaged areas. The Zionist regime also saw its largest anti-government protest since October 7th. Whether the mounting pressure will halt the Zionist regime's momentum towards a catastrophic invasion of Rafah remains to be seen. Al-Mizan, a Palestinian human rights group based in Gaza, said that mere statements won't stop the invasion of Gaza, which even Biden administration spokespersons have acknowledged would be a disaster. Al-Mizan said, what's needed are concrete actions. States must halt military support to Israel, impose sanctions per international law, and the International Criminal Court must issue arrest warrants for all members of the Israeli war cabinet.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Hello everyone, another edition of Gaza Under Attack, coming to you straight from the British capital, London. I'm Amina Taylor. Now, let's begin with an update on some of the most important talking points emerging from the US-Israeli genocide on Gaza. The United States has vetoed another United Nations Security Council draft resolution on the Israeli bombardment of Gaza. Washington's use of its veto blocked demands for an immediate ceasefire between Tel Aviv and the Palestinian resistance. The US proposed a rival draft instead, and the UK abstained. Britain's opposition Labour Party, meanwhile, is calling for an immediate humanitarian ceasefire for the first time since October, ahead of a crucial vote in the House of Commons to debate a SNP motion calling for a ceasefire. A spokesman said their position had shifted because the situation in Gaza had evolved. Israeli occupation forces have intensified their attacks on Palestinians inside the West Bank, with at least 5 dead in Jenin and scores more arrested. In just under 5 months, the US-led Israeli genocidal war on Gaza has killed at least 30,000 Palestinians, with thousands more entombed under the rubble, the vast majority of them women and children. So much to unpack here, and helping me to do just that is the political analyst Alex Ackerman, and via Skype from Leicester is Dr. Ishmael Patel. He's the founder of Friends of Al-Aqsa and a member of the Conflicts Forum. Gentlemen, good to see you both. But we start off with obviously some more news, Alex, that we're going to delve deeper into. We know that Washington blocked Israel again, provided some cover at the United Nations. Just briefly, your assessment of that situation.
Thank you very much for this another show about Gaza. And it's sad that we have to go through this again in this 21st century. War is still going on around the globe. Now, the situation in Gaza is heartbroken and despite the calls and the negotiations, unfortunately, things are not progressing. And yesterday, we were really shocked to see that, again, the U.S. is basically against having this stopped. So things are piling up again. People have been murdered, and destruction still continues. Now, we don't really know what the U.S. really want to achieve before they understand the destructions and the destruction of the human life. I mean, we're talking about human rights, but before talking about human rights, you have to have life. And it's not the first time it's happened in Gaza. The last 10 years, many wars have been occurred in these areas, and it still continue today. So there is a need for the U.S. to reconsider the position, and especially the international community to look at the evidence about what's happening.
I think also, in a way, Alex, that they have looked at the evidence. Have they not, Dr. Patel? Because it's clear that they provided some cover yesterday for Israel here. What are your fears about what happens in Gaza now, what is allowed to happen in Gaza because of that failed resolution, that failed veto attempt?
It's extremely alarming, actually, that with a superpower of the time is allowing Israel to carry out with a genocide, and it's really giving a license for the total annihilation of the people in Gaza. What we have in front of us really is United States of America and Britain to a certain extent providing that cover for Israel to continue with the ethnic cleansing and the genocide in Gaza. I mean, we've already had hundreds of pages of evidence in front of the ICJ in which it is categorically stated with evidence what Israel is carrying out, and the fact that these two powerful countries in the world now is obstructing for a ceasefire means that they're complicit in the genocide of the Palestinians. But it also shows that, you know, the killing of the Palestinians, while it's being done by the Israelis physically, it's being supported by America and Britain.
I want to stay with you there, Dr. Patel, because there has been talk about if there's a further escalation inside Rafah, if there's a further catastrophe, that it could be a red line for some countries who have so far kept their opposition to words.
You know, I'm slightly pessimistic about this. Unfortunately, we have seen in the past where countries have remained on the sideline. They have provided with words, but haven't come forward with the support. And so far, I mean, we've had 30,000 people killed. Over 1.2 million people are displaced. 400,000 homes have been destroyed. So where are these countries that are saying, you know, there is going to be a certain red line? We cannot wait for these countries to come to the support of the Palestinians at their 11th hour. They should have been there before. And the fact that they're not there means that the civil society really needs to up its game. It has to continue pressurizing the government. And only the people will hopefully be able to change certain governments. But I have very little hope in any government around the world to come for a direct aid of the Palestinians.
Dr. Patel, there, Alex mentioned people power so far and, you know, keeping that pressure on for civil society. How do you see it? Do you think it makes a difference?
I think, obviously, the protest across the globe is a strong message sent by communities to show the support to the Palestinian people. And especially, like to also point out that the South African state has taken a big step because historically, South Africa knows what suffering is about. The people of South Africa have been through. And when they look at their own story and what is happening in Gaza, they identify and they understand the bitterness, the feelings, and the destructions the Palestinian people are going through. So the steps taken by the South African country, state, to take Israel, to take this case to court is a good step because Mandela...
But Alex, there have been so many other African nations that have not followed suit. Yeah, that must be disappointing.
Yeah, but you see, politics today and even in different parts of the globe, people have... Not all leaders are leaders, you know. Mandela showed the way. And since Mandela passed away, look at in Africa. People still behave like and not leaders. And we see across West Africa, across Eastern Africa. So South Africa is a strong country with strong leaders. And Mandela has shown the path.
Indeed. And what a path it is. Stay on that topic for me, Alex. I'm going to come back to that. Because as we mentioned at the top of the program, that it was the United States on Tuesday who vetoed an Arab-backed and widely supported UN resolution demanding an immediate humanitarian ceasefire in the Israel genocide on Gaza. Now, Washington said that it would interfere with negotiations on a deal to free the captives in Israel if they'd backed that resolution. The vote in the 15-member Security Council was 13-1, with the United Kingdom abstaining, reflecting the strong support from countries around the globe for ending the more than four-month onslaught. Let's listen in to some of the reaction to that resolution vote.
Today, every Palestinian is a target for death, extermination, and genocide. We should ask ourselves, how many innocent lives must be sacrificed before the Council deems it necessary to call for a ceasefire?
This was yet again written by the United States delegation, the U.S. delegation, which continues to pursue the same objective to provide cover for its closest Middle East ally and to drag out time to the greatest possible extent for them to be able to carry out their inhumane plans against Gaza, specifically to expel the Palestinians from the Strip and to completely cleanse the Strip, essentially, and quite literally transforming it into an uninhabitable territory.
The veto of this draft resolution is not only regrettable after weeks of consultations with every single council member and after endless patience by the State of Palestine, the Arab states, and nearly the entire international community that for months have demanded a ceasefire. It is absolutely reckless and dangerous against shielding Israel, even as it commits the most shocking crimes.
Now, there was global reaction and, dare I say, revulsion to the U.S. position, with even China wading in. Dr. Patel, are the Americans simply buying Israel time to, quote, finish the job?
Unfortunately, it sounds like that. And one of the senators in America has said that this is the final solution. It might be a Freudian slip, but I think that is a sentiment of many American politicians who are trying to bolster Israel and make sure that they conquer everything between the river and the sea. And we are really concerned at this hour, of course, with the humanitarian catastrophe that is unfolding there and what we can do to pressurize both Israel and America and to a certain extent Britain as well to bring about that change. But there's no doubt in my mind at this particular time that America is full-heartedly behind Israel and wants Israel to do whatever it wants.
Now, it would be remiss of me, Dr. Patel, not to mention, of course, the sterling work that you do as a part of Friends of Al-Aqsa, those national demos and so on. Do you think, first of all, that that's contributed to not just the UK abstaining, but that important U-turn from the Labour Party with David Lammy coming out this morning? He, of course, the Shadow Home Secretary, saying that the Labour position has changed because the situation in Gaza evolved. I mean, it only took 30,000 plus martyred Palestinians, right?
Absolutely. I mean, the force and pressure comes from different sides and different angles and everything helps. But I think the civil society uprising in Britain, which we are part of, have been significant. I mean, the fact that over the past 5 months, nearly 5 months now, we've had 9 national demonstrations in London, and they have not waned. More and more people are coming out, and they're concerned about the people of Palestine, and they want justice and peace. And that enthusiasm, if you like, if that courage and solidarity by the British public has been pivotal in changing the position of the British Labour Party and its shift now away from supporting an open genocide. However, it's very late for me. And also the new amendments they're trying to put through in Parliament are really not going far enough in trying to bring about an immediate ceasefire. The fact that they're talking about a humanitarian ceasefire is really a way of trying to wiggle away from demanding Israel to immediately stop the onslaught on the Palestinians.
There is a vote happening Wednesday here in London, Alex, and finally the Labour Party. They haven't indicated whether or not they're going to vote for the amendment, or rather it be an abstention that they want. It was supposed to be the party of opposition, but they fell in line very quickly with the Conservatives. Just give me a feel of what that was like, realizing that there is no viable opposition here.
It's sad for some people. It's worrying for others because, obviously, what we are witnessing, which is happening right now, we just, as human beings, we see the atrocities. So when people try to delay any action which need to be taken, it's just, I don't know, I'm just beyond... It's just beyond belief. Yesterday, the Prince of Wales came out. He said there's a need for a ceasefire in Gaza because too many people have been killed. So these are leaders, these are people who have families who understand that every human being, whether it's in England or America or in Gaza or anywhere, we are all human beings. And it's like it's hidden. Everybody's seeing what is happening. And we don't really comprehend why this attitude, which is still really almost...
But we know, Alex, that speaking up for Palestine in the past, it's cost people their jobs and career. There have been people very, very afraid of saying anything right now, even at this point.
But this is the world we are living in because people are controlled, you know, by businesses, by the job, by the... And they don't want to risk anything because... Just by opening up your mouth, you can be exposed to sanctions or you can be exposed to even threat over things. So you have to have some certain courage as a person or as a leader or as whoever you are to come out and just see things as they should be. Because we are talking about the world is progressing or the world is moving forward. But if within 21st century, people can still... I mean, why the UN was created, you know, to stop all this atrocity within our humanity. And still, today, after 70 years of UN being in place, look at what's happening. And still, at the UN, they cannot even have a resolution because one country is against it.
And has the right and, to block ex- and the has entire the right to, thing.
So it brings into account the reform of the UN itself.
That's a really interesting point, Alex. Just a reminder, if you just joined us, that this is, of course, Gaza Under Attack, where we take a deep dive into some of the talking points surrounding the ongoing U.S.-Israeli genocidal war on Gaza's captive population. Palestinians seeking refuge in southern Gaza formed queues outside bakeries and lined up to buy food items amidst a shortage of supplies. More than half of the Gaza Strip's population of 2.3 million have sought refuge from the Israeli offensive in the southern city of Rafah. Large crowds, some standing for hours, anxiously waited for their turn to buy bread. Fatan al-Bitar, who was displaced from Sheikh Radwan in the north of the Palestinian enclave, said she only got two packets of bread for the 23 people or so in her tent.
We are getting a bundle of bread or two. There are almost 23 people in my tent. So I get a bundle, then I come back in the afternoon for another. Wood for burning is not always available. And when it is available, I'm not able to buy it. The situation is difficult. And of course, not just for me, but for everyone here and the displaced.
Carrying on the conversation with my guests, Alex Ackerman and Dr. Ismail Patel, in the short time that we have left. Alex, I saw you shaking your head there when this mother was describing the situation.
I mean, it's, as I said, it's what we're going through. I mean, during World War II or First World War, we didn't have images, we didn't have pictures. And despite the grief, people came out and said, okay, the world shouldn't be going through such atrocities. But 70 years down the line, what is happening in Gaza right now, there's no difference between what has happened, which made people to create the UN, and what's happening. And it's like, no, we don't want the UN. It's just disgraceful. And it's true that we still need to carry on with what we are doing. The people across the globe need to protest, to continue to protest, and we will get to get a solution, because the bottom line, we need to have a two-state solution so that Palestinians can also defend themselves, they can also protect themselves, and they can also plan like any normal society.
Life can't go on like this.
Yeah.
We talk sometimes, Dr. Patel, often hear of those who have been martyred and those who are living with catastrophic injuries. But we saw from that earlier clip there that for those who are surviving, who are not physically hurt at the moment, that life is really a form of hell at the moment. How are you assessing this moment in our history, Dr. Patel?
With great despondency, I'm afraid, and the sorrow that humanity has lowered itself at this level, as Alex has very eloquently put it forward. Remember, Rafah is now the biggest refugee camp in the world, with nearly 2 million people. Israel is using starvation as a means of killing the people in Gaza, in particularly the north of Gaza, where there is not even a little bit of bread going through. I mean, we've seen a lady here with at least a bundle of bread. But in North Gaza, there's absolutely nothing. People are dying of hunger and thirst in the 21st century. And I think to allow this to happen in our lifetime, I think makes a lot of people sad, concerned, and are questioning their own ability and the ability of their state and their leadership as to how this can happen. And we need to really make sure that this does not manifest and doesn't get wider in the region. And we try and save as many lives as possible by bringing sense to our politicians and political leaders. And therefore, it is imperative that people continue with their boycotting, their sanctioning, their lobbying of the politicians, the media as well, and also demonstrating. And it is only the people who I believe will be about to bring about a change. Because there's very little hope in our leadership at the moment. With Britain, we are in a specific position, particularly with this year being the election year. And we can bring about a greater change, I hope, in the political structure in Britain by demanding that those who do not vote for an immediate ceasefire should not be getting our vote. And those who do not respect international law, in particular the ICJ, should not be in a position to make laws for us.
Essentially, Dr. Patel, and briefly here, politicians should not forget the part they played here. We shouldn't just have business as usual in the next elections.
Absolutely. And I think people won't forget this time because they've taken for a ride too many times. I mean, we've been bitten through the same hole once already during the war in Iraq and Afghanistan. Now it's the same thing happening to us again. And, you know, Alex was asking a question, how is it possible for humanity to do this? But let's remind ourselves that it was the Europeans in particularly who carried out slavery and justified it and promoted it. They carried out colonialism around the world and colonized millions and millions of people. And they're the same powers today who are trying to undermine, subjugate, and dehumanize the Palestinians so they can be colonized and ethnically cleansed. So this is a cycle that's repeating itself. Of course, the only thing that is changing is the victim. The victimizers are still the same, and we need to change that dynamic.
That is a wonderful path with which we leave things. Alex Ackerman and Dr. Ismail Patel, thank you for your time with us. And of course, thank you. Join us again for more. Until then, continue to keep Palestine in your hearts.
Election in view of Imam Khomeini and Ayatollah Khamenei. In the name of God, salam and welcome to the program. The 12th round of parliamentary election and the 6th round of the Assembly of Experts election will be held in Iran on March 1st, 2024. The Iranian people will go to ballot boxes to elect the candidates of the Islamic Council Assembly, called Majlis, and the Assembly of Experts. This will once more manifest the unity of the followers of various faiths, religious sects, and ethnicities in the vast Iranian land. The Islamic Council Assembly, Majlis, is one of the three branches of power according to the Constitution of the Islamic Republic of Iran. It is the main basis of legislature in the country, and the members of the Majlis are elected with the direct votes of people for a four-year term. The Assembly of Experts, however, is a unique body in Iran which has been shaped since the victory of the Islamic Revolution. This organization has the duty of appointment of leader and supervision of the leader's performance. It can also dismiss the leader when needed. According to the Constitution of the Islamic Republic of Iran, during the time of occultation of Imam Mahdi, the 12th infallible Imam from the Prophet's progeny, the country and the Islamic Ummah is led by a just and God-wary jurisprudent. He is aware of the circumstances of time, is brave, and a prudent administrator. Such a jurisprudent is elected by the Assembly of Experts, as they are specialized in finding the qualifications for the most important position in the country. The members of the Assembly of Experts are elected for an 8-year term. Among the most important reasons for election in the Islamic Republic of Iran, as a religious rule, are the emphasis of the Quran and the narrations from the Prophet and his 12 infallible successors, blessings of God upon them. God says in verse 11 of chapter Ra'd of the Noble Quran, "Indeed, Allah does not change a people's lot unless they change what is in their souls." Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, also says, "No people consults except that is guided to the best way." In addition, Imam Ali, peace upon him, said that if there were not the big number of those who swear allegiance, it would abandon caliphate and rule of the Islamic Ummah. Moreover, Prophet has said elsewhere, "Whoever starts his day while he is indifferent towards the affairs of Muslims, he is not a Muslim." According to the founder of the Islamic Republic of Iran, Imam Khomeini, and his successor, Ayatollah Khamenei, too, elections are very important. Imam Khomeini used to emphasize on the high status and role of elections and would persuade everybody to take part in all elections. The Imam would consider election as one of the honors of the Islamic Republic system. He said that election is a picture of freedom and independence of the country. He made it clear several times that no one, including the ulema and the elite, is entitled to impose their view on people, and it is people who have the right to shape their fate. In view of this, the Imam said, "We have no right. God the Exalted has not granted us the right. The Prophet of Islam has not given us the right to impose anything upon our nation." Elsewhere, Imam Khomeini said, "The authority should be in people's hand. This is a rational issue. Every wise person accepts this issue that the ordinary